Now, let's hear about E. coli.
Okay.
Mr. Thomas.
Yes. This next item is a summary on our status report on an E. coli investigations that we've been doing for the past several weeks. As the board members are aware, there was an E. coli outbreak in August of 2006. It caused 3 deaths and 204 cases of illness that we know of so far. The FDA and DHS traced a specific strain of E. coli, which is called 0157H7, to 4 fields in the Monterey and San Benito County areas. Our regional monitoring program, and all this information is summarized in detail in the staff report, so I'm only going to touch on it. And then we have several staff people who will answer any questions that you may have. Our regional monitoring program is looking at fecal coliform and E. coli throughout the region, and I have a couple of maps to show you the results for some of that data. We've also requested an additional $130,000 from the state board to do additional testing specifically for 0157 to help us determine various sources. We're also now sharing this data with DHS and the FDA. The data was available in the past to these other agencies, but now we're trying to be more proactive and we're sending it to them on a regular basis. The staff report also summarizes the TMDL work that we are doing with respect to bacteria throughout the region, grants development work. We have several grants that are addressing this issue, doing different types of research. We also are addressing point sources relative to potential coliform bacteria problems. We sent a letter on October 24th to approximately 20 fruit and vegetable packers requiring increased monitoring for E. coli and 0157. The way the monitoring is set up, if they get a positive for E. coli, they would have to follow up and do 0157 monitoring as well. And the reason that this is important is that some of these packing facilities use wash water for fruits and vegetables, and that wash water is recycled and used on crops. So we wanted to make sure that there was not a problem with that wash water being discharged to crops. Another issue that this is one of the biggest issues that we're dealing with is ag management practices. The FDA is working on guidelines right now to address vegetation on and near irrigated farms. And from what we understand about these guidelines, they may require the elimination or minimization of vegetation on or near farms, which is in direct opposition to what we want and what we have been working with farmers to do. So we've been meeting with other agencies, such as the EPA and Department of Fish and Game and some others, to talk about this issue and elevate it among all of our respective agencies. And we're starting to talk to legislatures to raise the awareness of the issue with them. And we're working on another letter that would go to the FDA and potentially to legislators to address this issue. So we feel like we're on top of it, and we're going to keep pursuing this because it's one of the most important things we're working on right now.
Mr. Thomas, I just want to applaud your efforts, especially on the latter points. Harvey's letter of October 25th to the FDA, I really can't underline too strongly how misguided those guidelines can be. I mean, here we've done all this work for all this time to encourage agriculture to use these BMPs that are well known to be good for not just for water quality but also for habitat issues. I know that Congressman Farr is concerned about food safety, but he's also he understands the use of BMPs for use of vegetation BMPs. So I'm heartened that you're enlisting his support, because I think if he gets on it and joins the the water quality folks in pushing, because the FDA in Maryland doesn't know a damn thing about riparian buffer strips, frankly, and it's a red herring. This is not where the problem comes from. We're going to waste all this energy pitting food safety against water quality when that's not the issue. So whatever this board can do to underline that, push it harder. I know that Congressman Farr is even looking at earmarking some money to UC Santa Cruz to examine the food safety issue, water quality issue. So let's move ahead on those on all fronts, because that's just a bad answer, a bad response.
We've gotten a little bit of water thrown on us so far with our attempts to, even kind of engage some of the state board peripheral staff people in trying to elevate these concerns, and they think perhaps maybe that our region is marching off on a tangent on its own.
Well, maybe the state board needs to march back in step with us.
Yeah.
I think we've been leading on these issues.
Right. I agree with you, and I think that it really is misguided.
Yeah.
But, we have problems with perception within our own, hierarchy, without even getting outside of it.
Well, the data don't support that their view. The data support the practices that we've been,
right.
And the food safety data don't support removing vegetation and habitat.
Right.
So, once again, the potential is for a perception that is not based on any scientific data, and we should not put up with that for a minute.
Have we listed Mr. Farr's office so far in our
upcoming letter?
Yes. The answer is yes.
Why don't you come up to the podium so we can all hear you.
We plan to send out a second letter, a follow-up letter to our October 24th letter to the FDA, and that will directly ask for our involvement in the mandatory guidelines that are currently being developed. We state in the letter that we wish to take a upfront approach to be involved during the development of these guidelines rather than being forced into a regulatory situation or potential situation down the line. And that letter is being addressed to the four main groups that are involved in that development of the guidelines. We are also planning to address that letter to Sam Farr, Representative Laird, Dunham, and so I think there might have been one more legislator. So the legislators in that area.
Well, it would seem to me that staff has a kind of a typical and appropriate response to something like this, and perhaps the chair can be doing something that parallels this but can get to individuals that maybe staff wouldn't be addressing. Do you have any recommendations?
I think we need as much help as we can get. So we've enlisted, that was our reason for enlisting other agencies to get their help, but whatever we can, the help that we can receive, whatever help we can get from you,
I think staff needs to tell the board.
I'm not aware of what that would be. There are some hearings coming up on the development of those mandatory guidelines that I think is above, I feel it's above our level, like something like that.
Where are those and when are those?
There was a tentative meeting for December 19th, and that was just canceled. There's supposedly a meeting of the Ag Commission. I believe it's on that same date, December 19th. I need further information. This is all just developing, and it's happening quickly. Staying on top of the information as it comes in.
If there are hearings on mandatory guidelines that staff feel it would be useful to have board members attend.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should know that because with proper preparation, maybe, because what I think what the chair is getting at is that if other agencies and the state board hierarchy are, how should I put it delicately, disapproving of staff responses here, then we need the board membership to give them a little political cover, basically, and kind of take the political heat for being outspoken on this issue if it's not appropriate or effective for staff to do so there.
So maybe staff, and you can be thinking about what we can be doing, and Michael can let me know.
Okay.
And I think you may be contacting Mr. Farr's office directly.
Yeah, I mean, if it's up in the northern part of the region, Mr. Jeffries, Shallcross, and I can attend.
Right.
Be great to have Mr. Hayashi there if representing agriculture. You know, I mean,
that would be very much appreciated.
We'll do it. We'll keep you informed of meetings or hearings that may be coming up, and we'll ask for your support and participation.
Thank you.
Okay. I have
so we'll get little questions.
We'll be emailed all dates for all meetings.
If dates for high level meetings or hearings are set, I'll forward those to the board.
All right. I had some questions about the staff report. Does anyone else have any questions about it? Who can answer questions that I've got about E. coli?
Well, we have several people here. That ask your question.
A question I had was, I thought DNA testing was sufficient to tell us when a type of E. coli came from a boar versus cattle. Or humans. And so I'm a little, you know, surprised that this particular strain seems to exist in more than one mammal. So maybe you can clarify what's going on here with the testing.
I'll try. I'm Mary Adams, staff here at the regional board. The current DNA testing they're using is a method that detects variation in a nonsense sequence of DNA. So it looks at repeats of DNA and the variation of those repeats in different organisms and different strains of E. coli. The amount of variation they're seeing using this method and this technique is so variable within organisms as well as within strains of E. coli, they're not able to differentiate definitively between animals or strains. So what they're saying is they need a more robust method that's giving them more detailed information, basically. So the FDA has put out two separate papers that state basically that their method does allow them to definitively detect this 0157H7 strain. However, the variation within that strain as well as other virulent strains is so great that they can't determine source or specific strains using this technique. So,
does that mean because I think what the chair is getting at is that you could have false positives.
Yes.
In the wrong species.
In the wrong species.
I mean, you could have false positives, period, and thereby say, well, it's a wild boar issue, when in fact it was a cattle issue, or vice versa.
Right.
So how does the FDA propose to resolve that, if at all?
They're proposing to look into additional methods. The method they're using now, they can say, yes, 0157H7 does exist in this cow feces that we just tested.
Uh-huh.
It also exists in this, you know, feral pig species that we tested. However, they can't differentiate between one strain versus the other. They can't say this one. If they had them blindly, they couldn't say this one is from the cow and this
one
is from
the cow. Right, and so therefore, they can't say that what got people sick came from the cow or the boar.
No, they can't. Not with this method.
Right, and that's the problem.
Right.
So,
but what they are proposing to do with future research that they funded, I think it was a $1.2 million grant to USDA in coordination with Rob Atwell at UC Davis. They're doing source analysis, looking at feces of specific organisms on ranch land and wildlife upstream, as well as looking at sediment and water in both tailwater, irrigation water, things like that, to determine perhaps sources. But they won't be able to say, okay, in this blind sample, 10% is from pigs, 10% is from cows. And that's stuff they need to develop additional techniques using DNA.
Has the staff thought about what kind of recommendations it would make if that point is never resolved? I mean, suppose that testing methods don't really, are not able to, as you say, in a blind sample, attribute to one species or another. Then do you abandon that effort and try to do something else to deal with the problem?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I'm the right person to answer that, but I would say that at this stage, we think we have a study design with this current grant to develop risk and potential sources. And I think somebody else might better be able to answer your question more specifically,
okay.
But I think that we are confident that this will definitely identify source and risk of what we're looking at.
So you may not need the smoking gun, so to speak.
Well, that depends if our question was, what is the source of this contamination? Absolutely, we need that. But I think our question is, what are the risks and potential?
Yeah, and that's
sources?
What I was asking is, if this becomes a kind of a blind alley for this particular contamination, then the response, what you're suggesting, is to say, regardless, what can we do to minimize risks? What can we do to minimize sources?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, I'd like to see as much of that as it develops. If it's on email or to keep apprised as it moves along. Okay.
Okay. Another question I had was, it looks like from the staff report that we have been sampling for this strain prior to this outbreak?
Yes. Chris Rose could speak to that.
And so I'm curious how, you know.
I am Chris Rose, staff.
Yeah,
yes.
What prompted us to be sampling for that to begin with? What tripped that? And then how much data do we have?
Well, as you probably know, there have been like 20 outbreaks of this particular strain of E. coli in the past 10 years or so. So it was an outbreak that occurred in about 2001 that actually prompted us to work with DHS and USDA to also isolate this particular organism.
Where was that outbreak?
That was in Salinas.
It was.
It was,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's what prompted us to actually then take a look at not only the generic E. coli and levels within that watershed, but also look for the specific strain, 0157H7.
What I fear is a scorched earth response to this problem, is where you just say, okay, let's just homogenize everything, and it's just going to be one aseptic farms will become one aseptic holding vessel for the various inputs that you put in and pull out. That's a disaster.
Like a centralized approach instead of something that's
a Big Brother Orwell approach, I think.
Right, okay.
Put it.
All right, I don't have any other questions.
Okay. Before we move on to the next one, I'd like to acknowledge the staff who worked on this staff report and have been working on this issue. And I think that it's remarkable to me how the people in the office came together to work on this issue, how they responded to it. And especially I'd like to point out Karen Worster, Mary Adams, Chris Rose, Lisa McCann, John Robertson, Allison Jones, Jill Wilson, Cecile DeMartini, and Lori said after reviewing this report that she thought it was the best example she's ever read where people in the office came together to address a problem and do it so thoroughly. And Harvey Peck.
And so quickly.
Well. Yeah, so quickly.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Really appreciate it.